to further talk about the informed consent document, and I use the word document a lot because the accepted approach these days is that this should be documented. It should be a written statement. An informed consent, in the past, we've used the term a verbal informed consent or a face-to-face informed consent. These days, a written, documented piece of paper informed consent is the standard. It is highly recommended. An informed consent could be valid if it were witnessed in verbal format, but certainly a document is a better approach. Having a patient sign with a witness is obviously a better approach. Some chiropractors in the past have used this statement saying, well, the patient is in my office and they're asking for my care. That's implied consent. And these days I would say that the courts don't recognize mere presence in an office as an informed consent. It doesn't quite count. We need to explain the steps of informed consent to the patient. We need to have the patient sign a document that says they understand all of the elements of the informed consent. Here's another concept that comes up. There have been some court rulings concerning informed consent fairly recently, one of which I like to quote, because it does have implications in the chiropractic profession. A judge in a recent ruling in Brooklyn made the statement that an informed consent is not a moment in time. It is not a document that the patient signs and we stick in their file. An informed consent is an ongoing process of patient education, that we owe the patient information as it arises on an ongoing basis, not just a moment in time. That we continue to inform the patient as during the course of care. And in our approach to chiropractic care that may involve numerous encounters over a long period of time, we have the obligation to continue to inform the patient in an ongoing basis about the things that we have mentioned, the descriptions of the benefits, the description of the possible risks and discomforts, the alternatives, if new alternatives were to arise that you became aware of somewhere down the line in the course of chiropractic care, you have an obligation to tell people about them. If something new arises about the bad side of chiropractic, the downside, the possible negative implications of chiropractic care, you have an obligation to keep up with them, to inform the patient about them and regain their consent on an ongoing basis as that happens. So informed consent is not a solitary moment in time. It is an ongoing discussion in the informed consent basis. One of the things that has come up legally over the years is that quite a few states in the chiropractic regulatory mode have declared that giving informed consent or getting informed consent from a patient is a legal requirement. A number of states now, I have an article before me that says in 12 states, a signed consent form or properly documented verbal consent is a necessity before beginning chiropractic care. A number of states have written that into the rules and regulations of the board, recognizing that the informed consent is a problem area for a lot of chiropractors. A lot of chiropractors still go by the old approach of if the patient is here, they must want my care, and that is implied consent. Doesn't work anymore. Need to bring up the idea of what we call terms of acceptance. Many chiropractors have used a document called a terms of acceptance document over the years, and terms of acceptance documents, while they may fulfill some of the elements of the informed consent document, they also may not. Informed consent documents need to include the six elements that I mentioned. They must cover all of those. Your terms of acceptance document may not cover all those. Many terms of acceptance documents are excellent in discussing the benefits of chiropractic care, but they're pretty shy on discussing the downsides of chiropractic care. Very often, terms of acceptance documents are used to delineate the things that chiropractors do and the things that chiropractors don't do. And we may say in one of those terms of acceptance documents, it is not the duty of chiropractors to diagnose or treat conditions. And that statement could be in conflict with your own state laws. And your own state laws may be written in such a way that they are laid out in a condition-related type of care for chiropractors. Some states, it's pretty institutionalized that chiropractors treat conditions. And if you use a terms of acceptance document that says, I don't treat conditions, you're in direct conflict with your state law. So it's very important that you review the regulations, the board regulations, and the state law in your own state, and make sure that your documentation, your terms of acceptance, or your implied consent documents actually meet the necessities laid out by the state law. I will very shortly post a suggested informed consent document on the website, chiroethics.org, and I would invite your comments about it and see if you take a look at it and see if in any way it doesn't meet the requirements of some states you know about. Some states have a very medical approach to chiropractic. Chiropractic is considered a diagnosing and treating of conditions. And other states have a more lenient approach and allow chiropractors to approach chiropractic from a subluxation-based, wellness-based point of view. And so it's very important that you review them and make sure that your informed consent meets the requirements. I've been involved as an expert witness in a number of malpractice suits against chiropractors over the years. I do expert testimony defending the doctors most of the time. And one of the things that comes up, in addition to being sued for injuries, if a person has a herniated disc or has had an ache or a pain that is they have construed to be caused by the chiropractic intervention, very often that is listed as the number one complaint. But the number two complaint may be failure to inform. And I've seen that in numerous malpractice cases, failure to inform the patient that there could be a bad effect of chiropractic care. Any of you who have had surgery or who have had patients who have had surgery know that before undergoing surgery, you will always be asked to sign an informed consent document that tells you that the results of this surgery could really go bad. As a result of this surgery, you could be paralyzed, you could die, you could have a heart attack, you could have all of these things. And patients willingly sign those before undergoing surgery because they realize or they think at that point they have no choice, they have to sign it, they have to take the risks. In chiropractic care, somehow we have kind of come up with an attitude that there are no risks, and that's simply not true. There are risks involved in chiropractic care. You know, small things. You know, the high-low table can squash your fingers. If you use a chair to roll people around taking x-rays, it can run over a toe. There are things that can go wrong in the chiropractic office. An adjustment may make somebody sore. An adjustment could, you know, a well-placed adjustment even. Could, in certain instances, cause a cracked rib or cause soreness and discomfort that the patient may feel for some time. So we have to at least accept the possibility that there are some risks, And we have to inform the patient about these risks. So, as a bit of an assignment to you, I would say, make sure you have an informed consent document. If you have questions about this document, you could have it reviewed by an attorney for legal ramifications. If you'd like to email it to me, if you'd like to email it to our website, chiroethics.org, we could post it and have people comment on it and give you some feedback about it. But make sure that your informed consent document at least meets the six elements that I mentioned. A fair explanation of the procedures that you're going to do, a description of any potential discomforts and risks, a description of the benefits to be expected, disclosure of any alternative procedures that might be appropriate, and an offer to answer any inquiries that the patient may have. And the last one is an instruction to the patient that they may withdraw their consent at any time. So you review your own terms of acceptance document, review your own informed consent document to make sure that these elements are met, and then make sure you use the document. Having these documents created and letting them sit in the file cabinet while patients don't sign them doesn't do you any good. You must have the patient sign them. It's a good idea to have a duplicate so that you can give one to the patient and you can keep one in the patient's file. It is usually a good idea to have these witnessed. So you have your CA or you have one of the family members of the patient witness this document to indicate that the patient did indeed sign it. It has come up in malpractice cases, a patient denies signing an informed consent document, even when they did. So covering all your bases this way and using an informed consent certainly will go a long way to protect you against the threat of malpractice action, and informing your consent obviously makes for a better relationship with your patients. Thank you.